of you will have heard me before, and I was actually asked by some people in the coffee room, will you talk about this again? And I said, yes. So I just hope that you hear different messages this time as well and take more things in. What I also want to talk a little bit about at the beginning is my own reflections on leadership, my own personal experience a bit, reflecting a bit the topic of the day, which is exploring leadership. So I hope that's going to be okay. And talking about myself is always very easy because I sort of know myself, so I go on a little bit about it. But I think you will see later on when I talk about the National Implementation Board how it becomes relevant to what we are doing in NIB. Or many of you know, I'm the principal of Queen Margaret University. I've been doing that for nearly 5 years now. And Queen Margaret University does not do teacher education. At some stage, apparently we did do teacher training in domestic sciences, but that's a long, long time ago. And the reason why I was chosen to be the chair was exactly because we do not do teacher education, so that I could remain neutral. And I think the other reason why I was chosen is that this topic is, or was, certainly very new to me. And so I approach everything with a certain kind of ignorance and naivety, which perhaps was quite useful in addressing the agenda of the National Implementation Board. As you can hear from my background, I'm not Scottish, although I tend to talk, if I had a glass or two of wine, with a mixture of a German and Scottish twang, which is a bit odd. So I'm German by background, and my first degree was in Germany. My second degree was in Italy. My third degree was in England. And I also had a bit of a stint in Spain, being active as well as a teacher. However, I was teaching windsurfing, so something very, very different there. And what I did study at university, I studied Italian and French in education to become a secondary school teacher. And what I did study there was very similar to what you're trying to achieve in Scotland in terms of master's education in teaching. So my academic subjects, Italian and French language and literature, were very much interwoven with education all the way through leading up to a master's level. I then did not become a teacher, but I went to university to become a lecturer. I lectured in Italian literature. However, what I also lectured in, I lectured on a PGCE in modern languages. So I did teach on the English equivalent of the PGCE. So there's a bit of English experience in there when it comes to teacher education. The other perhaps relevant thing to talk about is my own schooling, my own education, my own background. I come from quite a simple working class family, and I have an older brother who had always been very, very clever, and who my parents decided he can go on to grammar school, which meant there wasn't much money left over to send me to a secondary school. And what my primary school teacher actually did is that she convinced my parents that I needed to go to a secondary school and I needed to go to a grammar school. I was very shy, I never put my hand up, didn't say a word. And she just said, no, no, there is something in her, she needs to go to secondary school. And she didn't let it go until she had convinced my parents that this is where I had to go, because the plans were that I needed to go to school until I was 14, which was the minimum requirement then, and then hopefully get married to somebody who had more money than me. That never happened. There you go. So she was inspirational and responsible for where I am now. And that then continued at secondary school as well. Again, inspirational teachers. Not having come from a background where my parents could actually tell me or help me with schoolwork, I struggled really in secondary school. I remember my first week doing geography. The geography teacher said, as homework, learn pages 11 to 15. Which was something about Italy or European country, I can't remember which one. I did not know what it meant, learn pages 11 to 15. I didn't know what it meant. I thought he meant memorize it. And since I was better at memorizing, I was up all night trying to memorize all these pages, and obviously I couldn't, I failed. And my parents could not explain to me what learning meant. So I had problems all the way through secondary school. But again, there were inspirational teachers who thought there is something there and let's help her. For example, the maths teacher, she invited me to her home and to family and said, look, you are gifted in maths, you should do this and that. I thought, well, me gifted in maths, I can't do that. Yes, it turned out to be one of my best subjects. The art teacher took me to galleries and exhibitions where I wouldn't have been able to go to because there was no public transport or anything, and anyway, I wouldn't have known about them. All these things I know aren't possible nowadays anymore. You as a teacher, you probably aren't even allowed to invite kids back to a home. But at that stage, it was very, very normal. And if it hadn't been, again, for these teachers, I don't think I would have got up to A-level and gone on to university. Then I told you about the university life and continue a little bit my journey there. When I then was working as a lecturer, there were two things, again, that helped me a great deal. One, which is very relevant, is professional development. And that's something I just went for big way. And that was without getting pay for it and without getting promotions for it. But I went for it because I didn't have the confidence. I thought maybe I wasn't good enough and I needed to learn more about what it meant to be a good lecturer. At that stage, right at the beginning, I was teaching some 8 to 10 hours each day. And I was still going every Saturday morning, like you are here on Saturday, I was doing professional development. And that was with peers. And what that helped me, it taught me an awful lot about teaching. It inspired me, it gave me enthusiasm, but it mainly really gave me the opportunity to discuss with peers around the table what teaching should be like, how we can improve, exchanging ideas with each other. So I did that throughout my working life as a lecturer. And later on, when I became a manager, I did lots of staff development in terms of leadership and management as well. And the other thing which was very crucial in terms of my working life were that I had mentors all the time. And they were either professional mentors, so I was allocated one who was supposed to help me, or they were just simply colleagues who took it upon themselves to point me in certain directions. And once again, without them, I wouldn't be here, because there were people who said, why don't you apply for this associate dean job? I said, no, me, no, never, ever. And it was always these people helping me throughout my career. So all this gave me the confidence, and all this also gave me the inspiration to continue with this incredibly, what was a demanding job, because teaching 8 to 10 hours each day and trying to research and so on was quite something. So I then came to the role of the chair of the National Implementation Board really with some enthusiasm that there is a real chance to improve teaching profession for the benefit of the students and their learning. Having said all that, this experience was extremely helpful, and I find chairing the board extremely stimulating, but also very challenging. And challenging, well, first of all, because I was a complete novice to it. Scotland, said 4.5 years I've been here. I knew about teacher education from England, but not from Scotland. First, I had to familiarize myself with all the acronyms. Oh, it is incredible how many acronyms you have. And obviously, you are so familiar with them. And people just threw them at me. And there I was with Wikipedia and you name it and Google, constantly searching what all these various acronyms meant. And then, obviously, I needed to find out, once I knew what they meant, what these organizations were about. Because just giving a title or a name of ACTS didn't tell me anything. So I obviously needed to find out your history and what it's all about and why there has been and maybe still is unhappiness. So that was quite a steep learning curve as well. And the other thing I needed to learn as well, that Scotland is obviously a very small country, and you all know each other. And when you go to a conference, you need to be very careful about what you're saying, because you will report back to somebody else, you will have heard me before, and so on. So that is very challenging. But the other challenging thing is also that chairing the National Implementation Board has been really like running a university. And sometimes people say running a university is like herding cats. And that sounds very negative, but if you think about who the academics are and why people go into academia, that there are people who are extremely committed to their subject, they are committed to their research, they go into university because they believe in academic freedom, they believe in autonomy, they have their own agendas, and in universities, you work in an environment with difficult budgets, so there isn't a lot of money around. So then trying to convince all these people to go along the same strategy and move forward is extremely difficult because you cannot tell people what to do. Okay, you can, but you won't get the results. Yeah, you need to work together in a collective way together, yeah, to come up with something where you think this is the future of the university. So the National Implementation Board, quite similar, in fact, because it brings together many, many different partners represented at the highest level, yeah, in education, all extremely committed to improving learning and education, but all, understandably, with their own agendas. I mean, every single education body has their own agenda. And although we all believe in the same thing, coming from your background, you want to achieve things your own way and perhaps with your own budget or not with your money and so on. So lots of agendas. So seeing then these colleagues coming together was really, really rewarding because everybody did believe jointly in an improvement in teacher education. But like I said, it has not been easy. Therefore, for all of this, I'm personally very committed to this agenda. I'm passionate about improving leadership in our schools, and I'm really pleased to be the chair because we have made huge progress, and there have been many stumbling blocks. What we did in the very first session, we came up with a long action plan. We came up with a plan together, by the way, which is very, very important. There's no way that I was going to tell people what to do. And we've slowly ticking all the points. They're green, some of them are amber, nothing is red, so we're making big progress. I think that a highly skilled and knowledgeable teaching profession is essential if we are to successfully implement curriculum for excellence, which is a major challenge, I know about that. And the role of educators in preparing learners to engage successfully in that is of huge significance. Teaching is extremely complex. Modern teachers must be able to teach, obviously, but they must also be able to understand and impact upon the wider children's agenda, which is huge. And in that, we need to support our teachers. We need to ensure that the learning, the access, is of high quality. We need to ensure that it is relevant to their experiences, but mainly that it has an impact on them and on the outcomes for the children and the young people. There is an acknowledgement that we must move the teaching profession from good to great. And not least, to deal with the important issues such as the attainment gap. I know that in the PISA study, Scotland seems to be the only country that, according to the study, has narrowed the attainment gap. But then we also know that the PISA study looks at certain indicators, not at all of them, and that many people argue with whether the PISA study really reflects what is going on. So it is pleasing, obviously, to see it in the PISA study, but no doubt there is still a huge challenge for us here to improve. And this can only be done if we are willing to consider all the areas where we can improve. So with this background, I want to talk to you a little bit about the work of the National Implementation Board. It seems what I'm going to tell you like a long list of things. Believe me, I've shortened it down and I've come up only with a few examples here because I do not want to bore you with everything. But I just want to illustrate to you what we have done. Now, we have been in place for a year now, which is difficult to fathom because it just seems like yesterday that we started on that. As I said before, we've made genuine progress. Originally, we thought we were going to meet for only a year, and the year is up now. And we soon realized there's still so much more to be done. So we are going to meet in this format until the summer. And even after that, we decided to continue meeting less frequently, but there's still a huge role for us to play in creating coherence and in evaluating, because there's no point in coming up with all these initiatives because we don't know where they're going to work. Yeah, we need to find out whether it's really going to work. So let me give you some examples of things we have been involved in. Local authorities and universities are developing partnerships that will enhance the early phase of teachers' education. And as these relationships are embedded, quality professional learning opportunities will become available to a greater number of teachers, and not just to teachers in their early years of their careers. The benefits to both schools and teachers in the early phase of the career are clear, because more confident and supported teachers, coming back to confidence here again in my own experience, so more confident and supported teachers coming through the system will simply push improvement. There should also be an enhanced role for teachers within schools in support and assessment of student and probationary teachers, because this is an excellent opportunity for teachers to develop their skills as coaches, mentors, and leaders, coming back again to my own story about mentors. The General Teaching Council for Scotland have redeveloped, as you know, the professional standards, and the new standards are modern, aspirational, and will provide the basis for teacher professional learning, hopefully for many years to come. Allied to this, the GTCS are rolling out a professional update, and that will hopefully ensure that teachers are provided with opportunities to continuously improve throughout their careers. I know that GTCS colleagues ran a workshop on the standards and professional update this morning. You did, didn't you? Okay, good. So I hope that some of you had the chance to attend. Turning now to the leadership agenda. Obviously, you're interested in the leadership agenda, otherwise you wouldn't be here. So I'm sure you're aware of our commitment to establish a leadership college. The college has great potential as a center point for leadership learning in Scotland. The college will work at four levels. It will develop a vision for educational leadership in Scotland. It will provide coherence across a range of opportunities. And pausing a bit on coherence, there is a lot about, as you know, about staff development, professional development everywhere, but it's offered by so many providers. You probably get inundated with leaflets, and then you have very little time, and you think, my goodness, what am I going to go for? I don't know. Is this good? Is this bad? Does it have credits or not? Does it help me? And so on. And we need to be able to have pull this together in one place to offer you some coherence, which makes it more accessible and easier for you to take part in these opportunities. The college will also generate new, high-quality provision, and it will try to embed leadership networks across both education and the public sector more widely, because there's a lot going on in the public sector that we can draw upon, so we need to embed all this. The team are working to establish the college. They are currently developing programs that will allow teachers, wherever they are in their careers, the opportunity to engage with high-quality professional learning. It's important to emphasize that a college is for all teachers. It's not just for a select few already in leadership schools. All teachers can profit from this. All teachers, in my opinion, are leaders, whether they lead a classroom, whether they lead on the curriculum for excellence, whether they are mentoring others. So it is available for everybody. The college has also already worked up proposals for a fellowship program, and that will identify experienced head teachers to become a source of knowledge that the college can call upon. These people will act as ambassadors for the college, and they work with the college to identify and support learning opportunities. We've established a shadow board under the chairmanship of Tony Finn, and that shadow board will work hard to ensure that it generates opportunities for all teachers to develop crucial leadership opportunities and skills. The college will also have a role in considering new headship qualifications. You will be aware that the review of the existing routes to headship has recently been completed, and the group made a presentation to the National Implementation Board, which was very, very interesting, very informative, but it was also very clear there are still lots of things that need to be done, and it is a very, very complex field. Turning now to another point that we have worked on and that the college will have partly responsibility for, which is the MA, the Masters. So an important part of our work is to support teachers to engage with Masters level learning. And I know that this is of particular interest to this audience as well. We know that the better the learning of our teachers, the better the learning of our children, young people. A lot of research has been done of that. I know that not all the research proves that, but the vast majority of research does prove that. I just read in the newspaper last week, in parallel, you might have read that as well, about nursing education, that in those hospitals, where the nurses have degrees, so are educated to a higher level, there are fewer deaths recorded in hospitals. I know it's a bit of a stark parallel here, but I'm definitely a firm believer in academic qualification and what this gives you to improve the workforce. So where teachers learn the skills of reflection and inquiry and be stretched in doing so, they might be, I think, in a position to tackle the underachievement that holds so many pupils back, including myself when I was little. But master's level learning, and I come back to the word confidence, also gives teachers the confidence to enter into schools and classroom research. This type of research allows schools to tackle issues particular to their own local context and local experiences. So hopefully teachers will also find that they're much more willing as a result to engage with other colleagues in dialogue and share experiences in a professional manner. University-based colleagues are developing a framework, a master's level framework, that will explain how teachers can get involved and how they can gain accreditation for work that they are undertaking now. And this, again, has not been easy to achieve. You have the University of Dundee present in the room here telling you about the MEd that they are offering, and they are also part of the working group looking at the master's level framework. If you think again, I talked about universities are like herding cats, but universities also competing against each other because the more students we have, the more money we get. So if we want to keep the students to ourselves, we don't want to make it possible that you leave and go to another university. And why would we accredit prior learning if a student can come to us and pay us money for the credits? So what we wanted to achieve through the MA is that there is a framework for teachers which is easier to get accreditation at master's level for school-based work. So this is accreditation of prior learning. Also, to make it possible that the framework is flexible so that students, that academic credits between universities can be swapped so that people can move from one university to another, from one course to another. And there was a bit of resistance there as well because universities said there is really no demand for it. But if it isn't there, we don't know what the demand could be. So let's just make it easy for the teachers to take up these opportunities. Now, this master's level framework will be published online and will be ready to use this summer. So there's still a lot to be done because of all the challenges there. But again, because the universities did realize, okay, we're working against each other, but we do believe that we need to work together in order to come up with something which is to the benefit of teachers and not make it more difficult for them, even if the individual universities might lose out as a result. The Scottish Government is also funding projects across Scotland through which universities, local authorities and private providers are working together to offer chances for teachers to learn at master's level. And these opportunities are designed to be sustainable. And I know when you hear sustainable, you hear no money. Yes, I know. So once they're up and running, it should allow many teachers to undertake high-quality learning. So it is pump priming, but they are meant to be sustainable after that. So I recognize that we need to encourage teachers into master's level learning. And this can be done by showing them that a lot of what they're already doing is at that level. And it doesn't always mean that these teachers need to seek academic credit or undertake assessments needed for this, but rather that the learning that they are engaged in is at master's level. Of course, all of this progress will be jeopardized if effective professional review and development procedures were not in place. At the end of January, Education Scotland published excellent new PRD guidance that will support teacher learning, and I commend this to you. This and other resources you will find on the website of Teaching Scotland's Future, which normally comes up behind me, but I didn't come with any technology. The website is www.teachingscotlandsfuture.org.uk. It's Teaching Scotland's Future all in one word, and being a teacher myself, not seeing an apostrophe in there hurts me. But as you know, websites do not accept apostrophes, so it's just teachingscotlandsfuture.org.uk. So please have a look at it. There's a vast area of resources on there. So many of the building blocks of the high-quality system for teachers' professional learning are now falling into place. What we do have, we have excellent programs for initial teacher education, supported by better links with local authorities. B, we have new professional standards. C, we have new opportunities for career-long learning that are being developed. And D, the crucial issue of identifying and developing a talented cohort of leaders is being addressed. Now, speaking to you today, I realize that this sounds like a long list of separate projects that are coming to fruition. So part of my challenge, which I talked about before, and the challenge of the National Implementation Board, is to draw these strands together in a way that makes these changes clear to teachers and has an impact in the classroom. And that is far more difficult than it sounds, because it requires an ongoing commitment of national organizations and the commitment of the teachers themselves to turn teaching Scotland's future in reality into a reality. And this is why I said we are continue meeting, because we need to make sure that this coherence is going to happen. Because in a way, although it wasn't easy to come up with all these action points and fulfill them, still it's a lot easier to make a list of things saying we've done them. But if they do not get done in the sector, if they're not implemented, if they're not embedded and become normal, it was all in vain. So we need to make sure that we analyze, evaluate the impact, and make sure that we have a coherence there and bring it all together. So that is part of our challenge, but there is also a challenge for you, which I want to give you. There is space for you, as highly skilled and qualified teachers, to lead teacher professional learning within the schools, and many of you will already be engaged in high-quality professional learning. And I would ask you to encourage your colleagues to get involved with the new opportunities that are now starting to appear. And you, what you should be doing, you should be asking about the partnerships being developed with universities. Be proactive about that. We have a communication strategy in place. In fact, we call it a communication and engagement strategy, because if you just communicate down, it doesn't mean that people listen and engage with it. However, there's only so much we can do, and very often the messages don't get through. So you also need to ask questions and need to ask about these partnerships. You need to try and find out what your authority is offering by way of master's level learning, and also try and keep track with the College for Educational Leadership as it takes place, as it takes shape. Organizations such as ACTS have an important role to play in providing a space for professional dialogue and exchange of ideas. And this is why you are here today. This is why I'm speaking to you today. And I thank you very much for inviting me. Thank you.
We've got her. She's staying for lunch, but we have some questions.
I functioned as an associate tutor with Aberdeen University in the Highland Partnership during the PGDE programme from 2005 to 2008. I spoke to my former line manager through that, and he was talking about not replacing the associate tutors as such, but looking at some kind of fellowship partnership between Region and Aberdeen Uni. Is that the kind of thing you envisage?
We are looking at all kinds of models. I mean, that could be one of them. The last thing we want is uniformity in this. So if it's something that works for you and that it works in the system, that would be fantastic.
My name's Rob Mackay, EIS Learning Representative. We've talked today about from good to great. Yep. My concern is that how many extra hours will teachers have to put in to get to great?
I'm not surprised by the question, so I was expecting it. I'm very aware that in the past, doing staff development, getting extra credits, getting the status that you have, you were provided with additional money, salary increases as well, which is a reward. This is not the case anymore. So the extra hours, I don't know how many extra hours. The only answer I can give you is that professional development is something that keeps you alive, that inspires you, that makes you enthusiastic, and that keeps you passionate about what you are doing. We, as the National Implementation Board, we obviously do not have a say about salaries or money, so that is not our job. So our big task is to try and convince you that it is worthwhile putting these hours in. And that's all I can say, but I do understand your concerns.
Could I add on to that as well? With our contractual 35-hour CPD, we've all been there and been at a CPD event and wondered, but if all the CPD that is available to us that we take up is of high quality, then we can use that 35 hours much more constructively than we necessarily have been in the past. And that's why we're looking towards the master's level CPD, professional recognition of courses, and I hesitate to use that word, more experiences, so that we can have more confidence that what we do engage with, we're going to get something back that can impact in our practice and really have a quality 35-hour CPD. That's an ambition, and it's an ambition we can all help lead. As Petra says, if we use our own expertise and say, hang on, I'm good at this, I can deliver a CPD experience or help develop or contribute or be involved in and ensuring it's meeting the needs of the teachers round about me.
Yes, also I have some international experience, and telling you about something that is better than in Scotland, Germany, for example, when it comes to professional development and teachers. I chatted to somebody over coffee earlier about that. The example was that a teacher friend of mine was given 2 weeks during term time to do an Italian language course in Italy. And the reason why she was given that opportunity was that she was teaching largely Turkish children. The idea was to make teachers aware about the difficulties that people have whose language is not, first language is not German, and to give teachers more intercultural understanding. So they offered during term time a language of choice in the country of choice, fully paid for. And she did profit from it a lot. She loved it a lot as well, because she stayed in Tuscany for 2 weeks, all paid for, which was great. And this is something that we certainly do not have in Scotland. But then, if I go to England, I feel that in my perhaps naive belief of having moved from England to Scotland, so many things are better here. I feel that teacher education is better, schools are better in Scotland than they are in England. I feel that maybe due to your philosophy, maybe due to the smallness of the country as well, there's much more for coherence, much more in believing in our school system, much more believing also in academic qualification, academic backgrounds, how important this is, the importance of education. So I do feel much more positive than perhaps many of you do about the future of Scotland's schools and teacher education.
Well, if you'd like to give a round of applause, please, for Petra. Thank you very much.